episode 5 of Corinth in Your Car. My name's Josh, one of the ministers at Corinth Christian Church. I'm here with Luke Sayer, our youth minister, and Adam Turner, our senior minister. And hey, we're excited to be back here on Labor Day. And man, it got me thinking, guys. Why in the world is it called Labor Day if many people don't, in fact, labor on this day?
I don't know. That one's always got me. It makes absolutely zero sense in my mind.
Well, I think isn't like the history of it like from whenever unions like really started going and those things, and so it was like a day off of labor, and so
I don't know. I mean,
so isn't it like
yes, it's as good as mine.
So can we baptize it? It's like a national Sabbath.
Ooh, I like that.
Sure, let's get really national Sabbath.
Yeah, one out of every 365, you get a Sabbath.
There you go.
It's the American way.
There you go. Well, hey, we're excited to be back and in your car on this Labor Day, and we're going to have some fun today. And so whether it's Labor Day or another holiday kind of day off, I thought it'd be fun to start. Guys, what do you do when you don't have anything to do on a day off? Do you grill? Do you play disc golf, regular golf? What's your go-to day off? Or as Luke said a few weeks ago, ball golf.
Yeah, ball golf.
Disc
ball
golf or ball golf. Yeah. What's your go-to day off activity? You know, what do you do?
I mean, probably mostly just either nothing or, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to try to play golf this year or not, you know, because it's just everybody else is out there already.
Yeah.
And so I generally just don't do much of anything. Growing up, though, I mean, it was always somebody fire up the grill, overcook hamburgers, and, you know, do that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the nail for me. I'm probably going to be out disc golfing. Here is one advantage to disc golf over ball golf is that you don't have to, like, go online and make a tee time or call somebody and make a tee time. You just show up, and generally you're going to be able to play without waiting on other people because you're in the middle of the woods, like I referenced in episode 2, just playing fetch with yourself, or episode 3, whenever it was. That's what you're doing. And yeah, on Labor Day and pretty much any day that I am not laboring, that is either what I will be doing or what I am dreaming about doing. And so this is a fun weekend as well, too, in regards to disc golf. Right now, happening today, is round 3 of the PDGA World Championship Tournament.
And man.
So, I've been following that one along.
Professional so disc watch golf, right?
Association.
Yeah.
So okay. PDGA. I'm going to be watching the championship, the final round on Saturday, and then trying to duplicate what they do on Monday when I go out to play on Labor Day. But yeah, go. Just regular things like grilling up hot dogs and hamburgers or steaks or fajitas or any type of meat. Like, I think it is, you have to eat meat on Labor Day. That's like a rule, I think.
All those holidays are fun to grill on, 4th of July, Labor Day, Memorial Day, all that stuff, for sure. For sure. Well, hey, today, you know, as we look back to the sermon from yesterday and kind of talking about legacy, yesterday was part 5 of our current series, the, you know, Lead Like Jesus, the legacy of the leader. Before we jump into the sermon, I wanted to hear from both of you. Where we get legacy a lot is in grandparents. And so I wanted to ask you just a couple, what are your favorite grandparent stories from the two of you? You know, grandpa, grandma, whether it's something they said, something they did, it could be funny, or it could be life lessons they taught you, things like that, their legacy. So,
yeah, for me, 2 quick stories pop into my mind. So I played 1 season of baseball before I decided I wanted to play a sport where I didn't have to wait 5 minutes to go out onto the field. Like, I wanted to be on the field doing things. So I played baseball for 1 season, and I've got asthma, you know, because the one thing in life I can stink at is breathing. And so I was playing baseball, and I hit, you know, I hit a line drive down first base. It was fair. It made it all the way down to the fence at like 7 years old. Coach pitched it to me, you know, all that sort of stuff. And like, I hustled my big head around the bases, slid into home for a home run inside the park. immediately ran to the dugout where my grandma was already there with like a hug for the home run and an inhaler for my lungs. And so that's just one memory that sticks out. She was there. I grew up for the majority of my life, without a lot of memories from grandparents. My grandma passed away when she was 8. My other grandma passed away before I even really remember who she was. My papa lived a little bit away from us, and so we didn't really have a lot of memories with him. But then the one that's still around and still kicking at 90 plus years old is Grandpa Bob, who is in Independence, Kansas. And so Independence, Kansas is kind of close to Joplin, about an hour and a half away. And so I would visit him occasionally while I was in school. And I remember one day I was in the basement with him, and he has a computer in the basement where he like just kind of like listens to old records and prints photos. Like that's what he does for fun. And so he was sitting down there and he's like talking about, you know, the Bible and faith and all that sort of stuff. And so he's got on this like, you know, 50s record of just like country hymns, like, you know, like, I don't know, Kenny Rogers singing Amazing Grace.
Kenny Rogers was not around in the
50s. Something like that. I don't know. Like, I don't know who any of these people are that are singing.
Hank Williams Sr. Let's just use that one.
Okay, boom. So that's probably one of the tapes that he has. And he's just listening to these things and like really like going, really just excited to share those with me. Like he was like, I want you to listen to this. And then he gave me a Bible that he found at a garage sale, because that's his other hobby, is to go to garage sales. And it was a Bible that was just a pocket New Testament, and it was called the Cowboy Bible. And it was on the cover of the Bible was like the most Western looking dude you could ever imagine, with a cowboy hat riding a horse. And as you kind of like flip through the Bible, there's like little devotionals for cowboys and pictures of horses and dudes wearing cowboy hats. And he was like, so excited. He was telling me, when I saw that, I was just like, I had to get it so that the preacher could have a cowboy Bible. And so he gives it to me, and like thinking like later that night, I was thinking about, okay, the cowboy Bible, the hymns, like I'm never, just my personality, the way I grew up, I'm never probably going to get something helpful out of a cowboy Bible. Like a cowboy devotional is not going to do anything for me. And, while I think hymns are beautiful, my choice of music and or worship is not, you know, country music hymns.
Sure.
So it was really cool just to think about his life experience, the way that he grew up, and to just think through his faith looks a little bit different than my faith, but it's still faith. He still genuinely loves the Lord, and he's passing it on, and he's excited about that. That was a really cool moment that I had with my grandpa.
Cool.
So that's the first story that comes to mind.
Adam, what about you, grandparents? I know you always got some fun and funny, crazy family connections. I love listening to those through the years.
Yeah. Most not appropriate for our podcast.
Not a recorded story here.
Yeah. No, I was fortunate enough. I spent my entire, you know, childhood, teenage years, all the way through college with all my grandparents around. I didn't have a grandparent pass away until I was 25, 26 years old. So super, super fortunate, you know, with that. So spent a lot of time. And I think, you know, one of the big things you just talk about, what do you remember? And it's just grandparents were always there, baseball games, basketball games, track meets, those things. But I was thinking about this, and it's like favorite stories. So one from the Gibson side and one from the Turner side is, so I remember one time I was at Grandma, Grandpa Gibson's house and riding with Grandpa on the tractor mower thing, and like this snake just like came out of nowhere, and I don't know why, but like the only thing I remember is my grandpa, his name is Chester, my grandma's name was Lavera. Okay.
Nice.
So names that are not used a lot now, but I remember grandpa just getting off the tractor, and I can distinctly hear his Chester Gibson voice going, "Lavera, get the hoe, get the hoe." And so then he just hacked that thing to death. And it was amazing. I think that's where my fear of snakes.
I was going to say, yeah, you have that fear of snakes. So yeah. Is that where that came from?
That's probably where it came from, especially since it was a mama snake and you could see the eggs that were inside. She was pregnant.
That is gross.
You could see
snakes, don't they give live birth too? Snakes are weird.
I don't know. Snakes are evil. And so, but you could see like the little eggs that weren't completely formed yet and the baby snakes started coming out of those. So that and what was it? Raiders of the Lost Ark. That'll take care of the
Indiana Jones there. Yeah.
But, you know, my Turner side, one of the things I remember is my grandpa, he was just an incredible storyteller. You know, Jesse James walking, you know, driving along a road, he could tell a story, spin a yarn, for however long the ride was, he could make that story, fit. And so just always loved that about my grandpa. And my grandmas were the quintessential, whenever you're sick, you go to grandma's house or grandma comes to your house.
Yeah.
You lay on the couch with the puke bucket next to you.
Chicken noodle soup, maybe.
Chicken noodle soup, and then you watch Bob Ross.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Happy so, trees,
Bob Ross
man.
Is awesome.
Yeah, just a happy
There are no tree. Mistakes, just happy happy little accidents.
That's exactly right.
Well, yeah, so I was thinking about my grandparents, and so I had my mom's parents, and then my dad's parents had been divorced when he was a teenager. So then I had kind of two sets on my dad's side. And my mom's side, you know, they lived in Colorado. And yes, I did pronounce that correctly. It is Colorado.
Because it's rad.
Not because it's rad, no. No, I got corrected years ago. People tell me it's Colorado. And anyway, it doesn't really matter that much, I guess. But everyone I know from Colorado says it that way, so
yeah,
that's not part of the story. Wayne, my grandpa, Wayne Wilson, always drove us around looking for elk. That was awesome and super fun. Emma Louise is just one of those names, once again, you don't really hear much anymore. That was my Mimi, and my daughter has Louise for a middle name, so just love that. And honestly, their biggest legacy was just my mother, one of the most incredible women that I know, taught me a lot about the Lord, mainly in just the way she lived her life. My dad's more of the upfront teacher, but she just lived a life. You know, my grandma Donna and Andy, before he died, when I graduated high school, on the other side, this is the Moore side now, my dad's mom Donna and Andy, her husband, took me to New York City, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. when I graduated high school. And it was just, man, what a fun trip. We ate calamari before every meal. Fried, grilled, sauteed. I mean, fell in love with calamari with them. And my dad's dad, Vern, and his wife, Malou, they passed on their faith. That's where the faith came from on my dad's side. And one of the coolest things I have actually is this card from Vern's dad, C.R. Moore. Mm. And it's this little business card size. And I have it, it's up in my office now. It's in a little frame. But apparently he was a part of something. This was a long time ago. He was older when my grandpa Vern was born. So this is a long time ago. But so C.R. was a part of something called the Pocket Testament League, and they signed this commitment with each other, everyone in the league, to read at least one chapter of the New Testament every single day and carry a pocket testament with them wherever they went. So I think about him passing his faith on to Vern, then to Mark, my dad, and then to me, and then my kids. Like, here we are. I mean, several generations you talk about backwards and then forwards. Yeah. Just a really cool thing. And, you know, talking about legacy yesterday in the sermon, Adam really appreciated what you did. And actually, you talked about your grandparents in the sermon and getting to preach some of their funerals and all that sort of stuff. So let's jump into the sermon as we think from yesterday. If you can recap that for us in 2 or 3 minutes, why don't you catch us back up for those of us that heard or forgot or whatever. So
yeah, have taken a nap. Since,
that's right. Slept since yesterday.
You know. Or you just weren't here because it's Labor Day Sunday and you don't have to come to church on Labor Day weekend. We're talking about legacy. And the basic idea is this, is that everybody will be remembered for something. It's just, that's the way it's going to go. It's true of me. It's true of you. Doesn't matter how old you are, eventually everybody will be remembered for something. And so as leaders, we ask the question, what do I want to be remembered for? Mm. And whenever people start telling stories about Luke or Adam or Josh or, you know, what are they going to say whenever everything is all said and done? We leave a legacy. And to be the kind of leaders like Jesus, then what we were talking about is, what's the condition of the soil, you know, that what we are planting, because we're all planting seeds that are going to leave a legacy. And so what is the condition of the soil? And there's, you know, all kinds of conditions we could sit and we could talk about, but we talked about, you know, just three, specifically, you know, we talked about our idea of, you got to be intentional. You got to begin with the end in mind. You've got to live with humility. You got to live with integrity. And those three things will, while they're not the end all be all, if you can get those three things right, then that's going to be the type of soil that we need as we're planting into it to leave a legacy that's going to outlast us.
Yeah, that's great. I love the image of the soil and planting trees, because just like a legacy, trees take a long time to grow. But it's important that they get planted, because if they're not planted, then they don't grow. So Luke, man, what for you jumped out yesterday? What's kind of one of your takeaways from the message?
Yeah, I thought walking through all three of those words was really helpful for me: intentionality, humility, and I said it's helpful and then I forgot what it is, integrity. So all three of them were helpful. I think the word intentional kind of jumped out at me the most, because I thought that was kind of a word that we've woven into this entire series without really weaving it in. So you use the word intentional, and you know, my mind goes back to week two, Josh, whenever you took vision, mission, and values, and you got to be thinking through, you know, you have to have the end in mind. And then you've got to actually do the work to get there. And to revisit that yesterday was really helpful for me, and be like, okay, well, I don't ever want to approach anything not with intentionality. Like, even I think back to whenever Tristan and I started to date, and I kind of liked her. And so I wanted to be intentional about the way that I was treating her and the things that we were doing, not just like, just the fun that we were having, but the conversations we were having and the way that it was progressing. Because at a certain point I looked at her and I was like, yeah, I think I want to marry her. And so it became, if that's like the next step that I want to take, then I want to be intentional about how I'm going to get there. And of course that continues into marriage, right? We talked about, okay, I want to be known as a loving husband who cherished my wife. Then I'm going to be intentional about the things that we're going to do there. And then apply that to anything, like leadership in ministry, leadership at home, leadership at work, all of those things. It's like, I got to start with the end in mind, and I got to be intentional about how I'm going to get there. I thought that was a really helpful reminder. Once again, just to hear that again, as we've heard it through the course of the series.
Yeah. And in some ways it feels like, this message has felt like it was a continuation of, was that week two?
The head of a leader.
Yeah, the head of the leader.
Yep.
Because so much of it is, it's about it, to be intentional. You have to have that true north. It's here's where I'm going. You'll never drift towards what is good, what is right. We always drift towards what's easy, and we all know that what's easy is generally not best.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So week two, then the head of the leader was almost kind of like, what are we doing or where are we going? And this, you said, is a continuation. It's sort of like, well, how are we going to do that? Because in order for the vision, mission, vision, like, you do have to be intentional. You do have to have humility and integrity. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, yeah, you're right. Part two of just how are we going to live it out? And Luke, you started, you know, your big takeaway was intentionality, which was the first sort of point of the message, the first of those 3 points. So let's camp out there for a little bit. When you think, Adam, about the word intentional or intentionality, are there people that jump to mind that are very intentional, or who have you learned intentionality from? And then the second follow-up question would just be, what hurdles to intentionality are there in our culture that we as leaders need to be ready to get over?
So starting with the second question, I think the hurdles are easiest to identify whenever we just kind of start thinking through our daily routines. And so, like, what's in the way of me living intentionally? One is we're lazy.
Okay.
It's hard work. It takes thought, and it's so much easier to be thoughtless than it is to be thoughtful. And so it's so much easier to just sit on the couch, to click, to continue to click. Are you still watching? Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Skip
the credits.
Skip the credits, skip the intro. You know, it's so much easier to do that than to be, intentional. We don't drift towards what is good. Like I said just a second ago, we always just drift towards what is easiest. The path of least resistance is where we tend to go. And so I think that's like the major hurdle. Another hurdle is probably, it is so rare to see, it's generally speaking rare to see people who are super intentional about what they do. And so it's not like we've had a lot of role models in our lives that have just like laid it out and said, here's how to do it. And so for me, whenever I think of people who live intentionally just do that, a couple names pop into mind. And, one is my mentor, Alan Algrim, one of the most intentional guys that I know on the planet in terms of like rhythms and checking in on people and, just his daily rhythms and routines. Another person happens to be sitting at the table right now who is leading the podcast today, Josh Moore. If you guys don't know, Josh is one of the most intentional people that I've ever met. And if you had the pleasure of being in that circle, you've probably experienced that as well. And so, I would say just a couple of names and, just right there, they just kind of pop into my mind of guys that are just super intentional with what they do.
Yeah, Luke. Well, thank you. First of all, that is a goal of mine. And, thanks.
This is an awkward at all.
Try to live with humility like the second point, but we'll jump there here in a minute. But Luke, who is it for you or some of the hurdles for you when you think about living with intentionality and just thinking about us here in the room? I thought it was really neat that we got 20s, 30s, 40s. We got no kids, young kids, graduated kids.
Yeah.
So the three of us have three very different perspectives on really all of these and how to live them out on a daily basis. So in your life right now, young married man, what are some hurdles to intentionality that you've had to get over?
Yeah, I think Adam hit one that popped to mind for me was that we're just lazy. The speed of our culture kind of tends to hurry us a little bit as well. And so we don't want to prioritize the time to be intentional, right? Because it's like, well, I got no time to sit down and be intentional because I've got to do this and I've got to do this and I've got to do this and I've got to do this. And even like, I feel silly whenever I complain about how quote unquote busy or overcrowded I am even in this room, because it's like, well, I don't have kids that I have to lug around from baseball or soccer or anything like that. And I don't have like, I don't have to drop them off at school or anything like that. But, I still look at my life and I'm like, okay, well, I still feel crowded. Where I don't have that, I've filled with other things.
Right.
And so it's really easy, no matter what stage of life to find yourself in, to make your life crowded. And whenever your life is crowded, you create less time to be intentional because you don't want to actually put in the work. And I think that what it's really tempting is for me in the 20s, if you want to call it that, is that it's really tempting to want a quick fix. Right. Mm-hmm. So like look at the end and be like, okay, I want to be there now.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm going to get there and I'm going to try to maybe shortcut a little bit. And you cannot be intentional and take shortcuts.
Yeah.
That just doesn't go that way at all. And whenever you take shortcuts, you're not being intentional. I always think about like, whenever I was playing soccer, we would run laps around the field and like it was just instilled in my brain from my dad. Whenever I run laps around the field, I'm not going to cut a corner.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go to the corner and I'm going to turn left and I'm going to go to the corner and I'm going to turn left all the way around. I was the only one on the team that wouldn't cut the corner, whether they cut from midfield to the goal line or They cut just in front of the corner flag. I was the only one on the team that ever just like ran all the way around. And man, they were selling themselves short whenever they cut the corner. We do the same thing in our lives all the time. Whenever we want a quick
fix. Isn't it so silly? Because they cut the corner and it's like, how much energy and time did you really save?
Yeah, not much.
But you're just wearing down your mental your mental energy to do hard things.
Right.
When you cut, it's just silly, silly little
things. It's silly, and it was frustrating because I had a good coach who understood that sin is communal.
That's great.
So whenever
so you all ran laps,
whenever teammates shortcutted, the whole team suffered the punishment. So I'm the guy like, okay, I'm going to not cut the corner. Everybody else is. And then I've got to run four laps extra.
Yeah,
because I needed it. I was out of shape anyway. But I think about that, just like it's really tempting in this stage to cut corners to get there faster. But that's not the way it works. You cannot cut corners and be intentional at the same time. And so I don't know. I think the first name that came to my mind, and I already talked about her just with intentional people, is my wife, Tristan. I have never seen somebody like think about what she says and does more than anybody else. It's funny, like even like before she sends a thoughtful text to someone, she will spend 30 minutes crafting the most thoughtful text to someone, and then she'll like, you know, show it to me, and she'll be like, do you think that that's okay, or does that need to go, or what do I need to add? And I'm like, just send the text, like, you know, all that sort of stuff. But for her, it's like, no, I want to actually take the time to be intentional about how I'm encouraging this person or how I'm communicating to this person. I think that's just one of those things as well. It's intentional. If you want to be intentional to get where you want to go, then you've got to do that in every aspect of your life, the way that you communicate with people, the way that you're spending time with Jesus, the way that you are leading. Everything has got to be rooted in the decision to not cut corners and be intentional.
So you'd probably say that verse from James applies to Tristan about you should be quick to listen, slow to speak.
Slow to speak, yeah.
And slow to become angry. I think, you know, seeing that in her as well, for sure. Something, Luke, you mentioned was intriguing, just how no matter what stage of life you're in, if you're listening out there and you're in your 20s and single, or 20s and married, or you got young kids, or, you know, elementary, any stage is what I'm getting at, any stage of life or parenting, we're always going to feel the crowdedness of a calendar, because empty spaces just get filled.
Yeah.
And we let our calendars fill up. And so one of the most practical things I heard years ago, you know, our culture is so, like, we worship the calendar. Like, if it's on the calendar, we're going to do it. So I just heard people talking about schedule, like put something, like actually just write it on your calendar, whether it's a paper calendar or a Google calendar or whatever you do, write it on there. Like, we're having family dinner tonight, or we're doing something, or like put it on the calendar. That way, when someone says, hey, do you have time on Thursday night? You say, oh, I'm sorry, I got something on my calendar already. Yeah. And they forgive you, like, oh, okay, it's on your calendar. So that's just kind of practical. Rubber hits the road. Maybe some of you out there, just as weird as it sounds, just start putting some things like on your calendar. And so you see it there. And so when people want your time or energy, you've already said your best yes to your family or your kids or whatever person you need to prioritize. You know, I thought of, also was thinking of the book of Ephesians. I'm just going to read a little bit here. Really about intentionality. Here's what it says in chapter 5, verse 15. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. So don't be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Don't get drunk, for that's debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit. And then it talks about, you know, psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, and living out in community with each other. And then it ends there, verse 21 says, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. So there's very, just several practical action steps if you want to live with intentionality. Just go read Ephesians chapter 5 and lots of practical things. So let's move on to humility. That's a, you know, big churchy word. So Adam, explain humility to us. Take the churchiness out of it. Yeah. What does it mean to live out humility in everyday life?
I think, you know, the way we said it yesterday was just learning to be unimpressed with yourself.
That's good.
And because it's so easy, especially whenever our circles of influence start to grow larger, or, you know, we see, you know, whatever success is deemed as, to just begin to think, as my, so to use a Bev Turner phrase, that we're hot snot, whenever we're nothing but cold boogers on a paper plate. So, it is just this idea of being unimpressed with yourself and more impressed with God's faithfulness and what he's doing. And so I think that that's just the key idea there of, it's the not thinking less of yourself. It's just thinking of yourself less.
Mm-hmm.
And, so yeah, that's a huge component. And, for me, you know, one of the things that I, was just thinking about this week as I was, doing daily readings and those things, been in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul goes off on a bit of a rant, because the church is like, well, I was baptized by Apollos, or I was baptized by Paul, you know? And he's like, who cares, man? That doesn't matter. He's like, I don't matter. Paulus doesn't matter. None of us matter. Here's what we do. We plant seeds, we water them, but ultimately it's God that makes them grow. And that's a guy that writes 2/3 of the New Testament who is really unimpressed with himself and more impressed with God's faithfulness.
Yes.
Yeah, because what does Paul say about himself? He says that he is the
chief of all sinners,
right? Yeah. He knows exactly who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we'll nerd out a little bit. That Greek tense is actually a present tense. It's like, he doesn't say I was the worst. It's I am.
Yeah.
So it's a waking up, a daily revelation for him that I am the chief of all sinners. And yet God has chosen me for a great task, which is kind of a leadership lesson for us all, right?
Yeah.
That God still tasks us and commissions us for great responsibility, just like Paul.
Yeah.
You know, and yet, well, even in our brokenness. So,
yeah, and Paul understood the way that the Lord had gifted him and called him too. Because you think of even to go back to Ephesians chapter 2, he begins to talk to these Christians who were living in Ephesus about like just his insight into the mystery of the gospel.
Yeah,
it's like whenever you read this, you can clearly see the insight that I have that God has revealed to me. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
If you don't know Paul's heart, then that could probably kind of sound a little bit arrogant. It's like, listen to me, I know what I'm talking about, but it's not that way at all. Paul knew he's the chief of sinners because nobody knows your own sin as well as you do.
Right.
And he understood the grace of the gospel applied to his life and that he had been called. And so one of the definitions that I heard of humility that was always helpful for me is humility is this. It's just knowing exactly who you are.
Yeah.
Nothing more and nothing less. Knowing exactly who you are. And there's two sides to that coin. You've got to know that you are a broken person, a sinner, and you're not better than anybody else. But also at the same time, you've also got to know that you have been created on purpose and for a purpose with gifts and talents and abilities that are to be used and celebrated even.
Yeah.
Some of the times, like we think humility and we think, okay, well, we just have to dismiss every compliment that we get, or we have to like belittle the way that God has gifted us. And I think that that's not right.
Well,
like,
it's not honoring to.
It's not honoring.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, I understand that God has created me to be this, or God has called me to this. And so I'm going to celebrate that, but I'm also not going to think of myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to think of others.
I'm just sitting here chuckling because it's like 1 Corinthians 3. He's like, you know, who cares who did this? But then in 1 Corinthians 5, you know, he just starts mocking the church because it's like, if only I was as smart as you, you know, and if all these other things, because there's that side of him too, to where he's like, he does know who he is. He has a firm rooted identity in who he is in Christ, how he's gifted, knows his brokenness, all those things. And so that's why, you know, humility isn't, you know, the phrase I've always, you know, heard used, it's, we don't want to be falsely humble. We don't want a false humility. True humility is just, I'm not impressed with myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think of myself very often. And so that's true humility. That false humility that you're talking about, Luke, is just frankly annoying whenever you encounter it. It's just like, would you just stop and accept a compliment?
Right.
Yeah. I know one of the lessons I learned from my dad, when he would preach a message or teach a class or whatever, and someone would come up afterwards and say, man, that was just so good. Thank you. That was excellent. And that's a real life moment where you're you gotta make a decision right there, right? So you could say, oh, thank you, and then let it go to your head. Or you could dismiss it and say, no, it wasn't that good, or something like that. And what I learned from him is he just simply said, man, praise God. Yeah. Because it was God's work, really. You know, speaking to that person, we might be speaking a message, and we play a part in it for sure. But really the point of it is that God has drawn someone to himself, maybe through our words. And so I've tried to adopt that as well. It's not that I don't want to accept a compliment, but it's like, hey, let's point at the true hero here. Jesus is the true hero. So man, praise God.
Yeah.
So
sure. And to come back to Jesus, I love that you hit Philippians 2 yesterday in your sermon, because that's true humility. Jesus knew that he was the Son of God. Like he knew. And yet he still did not consider himself he emptied himself and he became like one of us to serve us, because he was not thinking more of himself. He was thinking less of himself and more. He was thinking of himself less. That's the right phrase.
Yeah, right. Less often.
He was thinking more more about us. And so he came, he humbled himself, became obedient to death, even death on a cross. That's true humility. To follow that example of Jesus, Philippians 2, to not consider yourself to be all that, but to know who you are, and then to think of others and do for others what needs to be done.
Right. And also the words of Jesus himself, like the first are last and the last are first. So even the path to true greatness is putting yourself last, the whole upside down kingdom. So, man, integrity was the third point yesterday. And integrity, would you say it's fair to say this is lacking in our culture?
Yes.
Oh, why would we say that?
It is something that from any segment of society, the government, the church world, from, you know, every generation needs integrity. So let's talk about integrity for a little bit. What is it? And then let's go back to this question again. What are some hurdles that are facing us in our culture to live out integrity? So, Adam?
So integrity, basic definition, simple definition, is learning to be single-minded, learning to do, to have a pure heart. Jesus says, blessed are the pure in heart. You know, that is the idea of an integrity. It's not being double-sided. It's being straight down the line. You know, that's who God delights in, people with integrity. And so it's about the things like honesty. It's about, being able to see your life as an open book kind of thing. Integrity, another thing for me that whenever I've, you know, just tried to think through personal integrity, one of the characteristics I want to be said about me, that Adam was integrous. Adam was full of integrity. And so what that also means to me is the benefit of it is when accusations come against you, they slide off because of the integrity that you have lived with.
Right.
And so in some sense, it is like it's like Teflon. And so it's a way, you know, it's just
like that.
You are living honestly. You let your yes be yes, your no be no. You speak the truth. You're clear. You do those things. You just do what is right, because in the end, you know, the truth comes out.
Yeah. And I think too, in addition, just to go a little bit further, who you are publicly also is who you are privately.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, that's a huge key to integrity.
Yeah, especially for those of us who are up front. If you're leading your business, even leading your home, you're an upfront leader. And so, do your kids see the same thing at home that they do whenever you're out in public? I mean, that's the public-private thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. So in high school, this is the first word that the first time that I really reflected on the word integrity. So I was a high school boy. And so I did things high school boys do, which is just so on a computer. I was doing things high school boys do.
Right.
So there you go. Use your imagination to put that
together.
Don't use your imagination. But
you were playing fantasy football.
Sure. Something like that. So I got caught by my parents because they can see, you know, all that sort of stuff. And they pulled me in to their room to talk about it for the first time. And I was expecting to kind of get ripped apart for the sin that was there. But they actually threw out the word integrity.
Yeah.
Which made me think a little bit, you know, more. It's like, okay, Luke, you're a high school student who has communicated to us that you love the Lord and that you want to pursue ministry and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, you can't do that if you're doing this because that's not a moment where you're acting with integrity. And that's the moment that I realized that whole public and private thing is in any context, ministry or not, if you want to be a leader and you want to make a difference publicly, then you've got to get your life right privately as well. You can't be sinning privately and then expect to be able to make a difference publicly.
Yeah, it eventually, it all comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, even if it doesn't come out in this life, I mean, the Bible is just chock full of messages that, like, one day.
Yes.
You know, and that's those are frightening things. Were it not that we, I mean, it still should be frightening, but we also don't need to live in fear. Perfect love casts out fear, right? First John. But we are, our private lives match up with our public lives. And as I thought about just these three words, intentionality, humility, and integrity, there's a huge connection in my mind between intentionality and integrity. Because I think that a lot of the things that we slip up or would be tempted to slip up in integrity are because we have not been intentional.
That's good.
So, for example, a website that may be visited on a phone or on a computer isn't visited in broad daylight in front of your family, most likely.
Yeah.
It is visited because you haven't intentionally put your phone away at the right time of day and you haven't thought intentionally ahead of time about where you need to be, at what time you need to be, or what decisions you're making. And so I think all three of these play together because even humility, you know, you talk about having the correct view of yourself. Part of that is understanding your weaknesses and being willing enough to admit those to people that can help you. And I love, Adam, your phrase, call you up instead of call you out.
Yeah.
Nobody likes to just be dragged through the mud and said, hey, you did wrong again.
Yeah.
You know, but call you up and remind you, like your parents did, Luke, to, hey, remember who you are. This is your identity. Yeah. And this doesn't seem like you.
Right.
I love that example from your parents to come alongside of you
really
as a coach instead of, you know, someone who's punishing you in timeout. They reminded you of who you are.
Yeah. Good. It's good. I love the way that you strung all three together there. It makes a ton of sense.
Adam, you looked like you were going to say something a while ago with integrity. Did the thought escape you, or was it something else you were thinking?
No, you guys were running in a great direction, so I just kept my mouth shut. So if we go to the question of why is it a struggle?
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the biggest things is it is just rare. And so it's not modeled for us. We are used to, we expect people in leadership positions to fail.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we expect now. We've been trained to think that. And it's, you know, whether it's politician, whether it's a preacher, whether it's a business leader, whether it's, you know, in the lower levels of, or not the lower levels, but, you know, the levels of schools, administrators, teachers, we just have been trained now to just expect that everybody has just this dark secret. And so we are not used to seeing integrity. And so since we don't think it's out there, we don't think it can be in here. Mm. And so we don't even pay attention to it. And so that's where, who are you surrounding yourself with? You know, we become like those we run with. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future.
Yep.
Birds of a feather flock together. And, you know, so finding the people who are living, lives of integrity seems like a very difficult task. And so that which is difficult, we tend not to seek out. And so we just, once again,
goes back to intentionality, right?
Yeah.
It's easier to sit on the couch. And man, I love that you said that yesterday with who you run with.
yeah,
kind of determines where you're running. And I just heard another podcast or sermon I was listening to or something recently. They said it so well. They just said people of faith drift from people of faith before they drift from their faith. It's so good.
Wow. It's like
you need to choose your circles, because you don't just lose your faith. It's not like your car keys that you didn't have a tile on and you don't know where they are. It's like there were decisions that happened, and so you drifted from the people of faith before you drifted from your faith.
Say that one more time. That was really, really...
Yeah, so people of faith drift from people of faith before they drift from their faith.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like the people you surround yourself with are influencing you, whether you are 12 or 40 or 70. Yeah. You know, it's always true.
And so that's why it's written in the New Testament, don't neglect meeting with one another.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as it's called today, encourage one another. Yeah. So, man, this has been good. I love these three words. I've loved this series as well. It's been so practical and so challenging and so good. So, Adam, anything else to add before we kind of move on to a leadership challenge? Anything from yesterday?
Yeah, I would just remind people that you are building a legacy. This is not an optional. This is not an option.
That's right. Yeah.
You are going to leave a legacy. And so what are you going to leave? And I love Psalm 90, verse 12. Mm-hmm. I love that. Teach us to number our days so that we would gain a heart of wisdom. And I know for a lot of people, just the idea of thinking, hey, I'm not going to be on this earth forever.
Yeah.
Freaks them out.
Yeah.
But what Moses is saying there in Psalm 90 is that's actually where wisdom comes from.
Yeah.
Our time is short. We may have, he says 70, maybe 80 years if our strength holds up. And so we've got to look at it and go, what am I accomplishing? Am I going to live for a legacy or for a resume? What am I going to do?
That's right. Luke, what would you skip into the leadership challenge here now? What would you say to kind of wrap this sermon up, this series up? What's going on in your mind to live this out? What's a challenge you can get?
Yeah, I think I'm thinking through the whole series, right? Lead like Jesus, Jesus' best leader of all time with the greatest following of all time. And there's a reason for that. And kind of the encouragement that we've given throughout this whole series is that if you, number one, you are a leader. And if you want to be a good leader like Jesus was, then you've got to pay attention to how Jesus led. And I think that if we're really honest with ourselves, sometimes we are tempted, even in Christian work, sometimes we are tempted to accomplish great things for the glory of God's kingdom that we forget that we just have to actually know who Jesus is intimately.
Mm-hmm.
And apply that to any type of leadership where you're at your home or you're at your job, wherever you have influence. If you want to be a good leader, you've got to decide how you're going to measure your success and understand that the most important thing for you to do is to know who Jesus is intimately, and then everything else will be added to you then.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? And so, man, leadership challenge, get with Jesus.
Lead like Jesus.
You've got to know who he is, because if you don't know who he is, then you're not going to know how he led. There's this verse that haunts me, and it's Jesus, and he says, people are going to come to me crying out, Jesus, Jesus, I've done all of these things in your name, and Jesus is going to say, hey, depart from me, because I didn't even know you.
Yeah, right.
And man, don't fall into the temptation to lead so magnificently that you forget to know Jesus intimately.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. I was thinking through this, particularly for this message, and it got me thinking. We have this verse written up in our house, Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. It says, do not grow weary in doing good, for in due time you will reap a harvest of righteousness if you don't give up.
Mm.
And so I would just say, don't grow weary. Like, do the things that you know are most important, even if you don't see the fruit. Because remember, it's the soil that we're talking about. Let's create the soil that a healthy tree a legacy you can grow in. And, you know, you're not going to see that overnight. It's not a microwave culture. And so I think coupled with that is just this challenge that I would just give to you listening out there that says, focus more on a hopeful future instead of a regretful past. Because it is so easy for you to look back on your life or leadership, and you could always point out something you could have done better or that you missed, and maybe use those to learn a lesson, but don't live in regret. That's not helpful. Look forward in hope and live intentionally, live with integrity, live with humility, and man, don't grow weary of doing good, because you will reap if you don't give up. So it's been a fun series, and thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, listening and sharing and all the stuff of even joining in with questions and things like that. We want to do more of that in the future, but for now, we're going to jump into a little bit of fun. Some, I guess, hot takes. Is that what we're calling them still? Funny questions, hot takes?
Hot takes.
Spicy takes?
Spicy
takes. All right. Spicy. So this is going to be fun. Tell me your biggest pet peeve, Luke.
Biggest pet peeve. So oddly enough, they both happen at Walmart.
Oh.
And my biggest pet peeve is whenever somebody leaves a grocery cart in the parking lot.
You mean a buggy.
A buggy, whatever you want to call it. My biggest pet peeve is whenever they leave that in the middle of the parking lot without taking it back. It is really, really hard for me to love somebody the way that Jesus would love somebody whenever I see them do that. I'm like, oh, just go put it back. It's messing with the whole flow. But then also at the same time, when people walk in the exit door and out the entrance door, it drives me nuts.
Both of them say welcome.
No.
On both sides.
There is one that specifically says entrance and one that specifically says
exit. But they both say welcome.
And it messes out. There was this one time, it was about 4 months ago, and I remember it, and I need to get over myself because it's not that big of a deal. But there was a Walmart employee that did it. It's like, you're supposed to be like, you're messing with the flow of traffic. Now I've got to do this awkward little dance with somebody because I'm going in the right way, but they're leaving the wrong way. And it's this encounter that just made my Walmart experience not what I wanted it to be. So I guess maybe in the future I'll just shop at Kroger.
It's a Walmart.
Those are my pet peeves.
If you have high expectations, you gotta lower your expectations. To a Walmart supercenter.
Yeah.
Those expectations need to change.
Yeah, this may be, I heard this phrase the other day. That may be a YP.
A YP?
Yeah, that's a you problem.
A you problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pet peeve. That's my pet
wipey.
Peeve. You know, there was a.
It sounds kind of gross.
There's a pastor of College Heights Christian Church for years and years and years. When he stepped away from that role, he and his wife took a role at Ozark, Randy Garris, and they have a dog, and they named him Peavy. He's their pet.
He's pet Peavy.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Waka waka.
Have you ever seen the dogs named D.O.G.? Like D-O-G, but you pronounce it D-O-G or cat, you know, C-A-T.
Oh, man.
Anyway, Adam, what's your biggest pet peeve?
I unfortunately have a lot, so I'll just go to one of them is people who drive 40 miles an hour on Highway 81.
There you go.
In any direction. That's enough to just...
Or driving in the slowly in the fast lane, right?
Yes.
That's a pet peeve. Yeah, mine goes to traffic as well, and it is about four-way stops or roundabouts. People that do not do those correctly.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And, you know, I drive that roundabout every single day on the way to work. Yeah. So
I get to
practice patience every day. How about that?
And humility. Somebody told me the other day that they were in a roundabout, and so they were watching this take place. Somebody was driving in the roundabout, and they stopped in the roundabout to let the car get into the roundabout.
That's it. Oh,
like,
man.
It's a roundabout, not a stopabout.
Stop, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, what's the most useless word in the English language?
Whoa, that is a good question.
Goodness. Wow. See, what people need to know here is these are all blind. I looked them up.
I thought they were funny, and
yeah,
this is fun to surprise us.
Most useless
word. English language.
I asked this question the other day, and so here's what someone else said.
The Atlanta Falcons.
They said surreal. They thought, I think the word surreal is way overused, and people don't know what they're doing with it. Mm. How about this? Irregardless?
Yeah.
It means the same as regardless. So, any others?
Indubitably.
Indubitably.
It's just fun to say,
indubitably.
Though, you know?
Probably low-fat ice cream.
So, that's maybe the one of the most useless items. Yeah.
Sugar-free ice cream.
Here's a pet peeve and an answer to the same question. I don't like the word swell.
Ooh,
like I would be cool if that one just went. Because like whenever I ask you how you're doing and somebody says swell, I'm just like, why did you have to make a contraction that doesn't need to be made? Like, just tell me if you're.
Good to know. You guys should log this away. And any time you see Luke in the lobby, you just say, "You look swell."
Yes.
Well, see, here's how I'm going to take that. I'm going to be like, well, am I like, you know, like, do I need to ice something? Like, does my face look swollen? What is going on here? I don't know. I could do without that word.
Here's another random question. How many holes does a straw have?
I think it's one.
Yeah.
Right.
Would you rather? Let's go to a would you rather.
Okay, here we go.
Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
I would do the duck-sized horses.
I think horse-sized
horse-sized duck.
Sorry.
That's terrifying.
A mental image.
That just clicked in my mind what that would actually look like.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah.
100 is a lot though.
Yeah, but
horse-sized ducks.
So, but like, in my mind, if they're horses and they're duck-sized, I mean, I guess they can still. They have to be limited, likely to some speed. Like they can't go as fast as a grown horse.
And they can't kick as hard either.
And they can't kick as hard.
They don't have enough leverage.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm counting on I can kick them away or I can run away or something.
Because can you imagine the size of the bill?
Your skull is crushed instantly.
Yeah.
I've heard a question like that before with kindergartners. would you rather fight 100 kindergartners or like something else?
It's like, that's right.
Don't send 100 kindergartners.
So my answer is also the 100 duck-sized
horses. I think that's what I'm going with.
All right. One last silly question. Boneless chicken wings are just chicken nuggets.
Amen.
Amen.
That's the gospel of Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes.
Yeah, they're just chicken nuggets.
It's just flavored chicken nuggets.
Boneless wings. Yeah. Come on. Chicken wings have the bones.
If you do not have to go wash your hands after you have finished wings, then you didn't eat wings.
If you don't have to take a shower you ate wings, I mean, you didn't eat wings.
No. So final thing then, let's help our listeners. What is the best place to get chicken wings within, 20 minutes of the church?
Oh, man.
There's a lot of good places. I think that my favorite, and it's only because of the two flavors, is Spice Wing up in Loganville next to Kroger.
That's good.
They have two flavors that I love, Chezzy and Kickin' Bourbon. Those are really good flavors.
Chezzy.
It's like a mixture
It's like three spices. Explain. Yeah. What is that?
Three different ones. Buffalo and Cajun and lemon pepper.
That's it. Yeah, it's excellent. I get that every time
too.
It's
very good.
And then I forget what else. The hot honey, maybe. I forget what else I get. Something there. That's
hot honey too.
Yeah.
I think it's also so we've got 20s, 30s, and 40s represented in the room, but we also have three different ways of enjoying wings in the room too. Because I prefer blue cheese.
Ooh,
Adam, I think you prefer ranch.
Nothing.
Okay, Josh, nothing. You're also
get
nothing.
It away. Okay.
Yeah,
so ranch and blue cheese.
I thought that we were representative of the three different ways.
That wasn't a hot take, but blue cheese is nasty. It's so gross.
It is not. Blue cheese is delicious.
Ranch is also overrated.
Oh, I can get on board with that.
Very overrated.
Like, you guys want to bathe in ranch, and I don't understand that. No. Everything has got to be ranched.
Man, several years back, Cody Powell, if you're listening, used way too much ranch on his pizza. But anyway, I digress. So let's close it out and just wish you a happy Labor Day and a great week. We will start a brand new series next week called You Are Here, correct? A sermon series on Sunday. And so we invite you to definitely be a part of that, show up Sunday, and then we will be right back here, Corinth, in your car next Monday morning. So Hey, let us know what your Labor Day plans were, what you did, how you enjoyed it. Did you grill out? Did you go to the lake? Did you go on vacation? What did you do? And also, hey, let us know what questions you want to see us answer. Maybe we can do a mailbag section on some future episodes. We'll just open up some questions from the mailbag, from you, our listeners. That's all we got for today, I think, unless you have any more closing words, you two.
Put your grocery carts up.
Oh, there you go.
That's all I've got.
And hope you enjoyed wearing white shoes.
There you go. It's post-Labor Day, so I guess back in the day, it would have been when you go back to school, right? But we go back on August 1st now. So times have changed, but man, we love you. We like you, and we can't wait to see you next week.